The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll. And he never lets us down. Delivers the goods every single Friday. Always calling in just in the nick of time. It's Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Duff McKagan's Joke of the Week.
Hi, Chris Jericho. It's Duff McKagan calling you. It's morning time here in Tallinn, Estonia. One of the most invaded countries over the last 1,000 years. But Tallinn's beautiful. Sunny. I'm on the Baltic Sea. You can take a ferry to Helsinki, 2-hour ferry ride. I don't know if I told you, but I quit my job as a triangle player in a reggae band. Yeah, it was just one ting after another. Thank you.
Ting. It's one ting after another, man. That's great. Duff calling in jokes from the middle of a Guns N' Roses sold-out European summer tour, keeping us laughing and rocking all summer long. Love him like a brother. Thank you, Duff. And speaking of rocking, John 5 from Rob Zombie, formerly of Marilyn Manson, is ready to rock Talk is Jericho with awesome stories about writing and recording with David Lee Roth, touring with Manson, playing with Rob Zombie, playing with Rob Halford, and how he amassed such a killer collection of Kiss memorabilia, which he's sharing on Instagram, Knights in Satan's Service. That's Knights with a K, like Knights of the Round Table. We talk about some of the stuff he has. We talk about the first time he ever met Gene Simmons, what it was like growing up in Detroit Rock City. He's currently on the road with Rob Zombie, touring with Marilyn Manson, but he's here. John 5 comes alive on Talk is Jericho. And if you listen closely, you might hear a little something about the upcoming new Rob Zombie studio album that they just finished recording. It's supposed to come out early next year. John 5 on his way, and so is Fozzy's summer tour. We're headed to Europe next week at the Pfezzen Festival in Hungary on July 26th. July 27th in Prague, the Czech Republic at the Futurum. That's a Fozzy headlining gig. If you're in the Czech Republic area and you've never seen Fozzy, here's your chance. July 28th, the Rock of Ages Festival in Sebron, Germany. The 29th, Zurich, Switzerland at Verk 21. 31st, Rock Planet in Pinerello di Servia, Italy. August 1st in Slovenia. August 3rd, the Wacken Festival in Wacken, Germany. The 4th is Berlin. The 5th is Bochum. The 7th is Aschaffenburg, Germany. That one's sold out. The 9th is Leyendas de Rock Festival in Alicante, Spain. The 11th, the Alcatraz Festival in Belgium. Get there early. We're going on first. And the 12th, the big return to the main stage at Bloodstock in Derbyshire, England. And then, of course, we come back to the States for the start of the Judas Rising Tour. Friday, August 24th in Atlanta, Georgia at the classic famous Smith's Old Bar. We're going to be with Adelita's Way, The Stir, Stone Broken. FozzyRock.com has all ticket information. And it's the place to buy tickets to Fozzy's VIP meet and greets. We do a mini concert just for you, songs that you're not going to hear later on that night. We take pictures, we meet and greet you. So come hang out with us before the show at one of the best VIP meet and greets in the business. The 26th, Huntsville, Alabama, August 29th, Clarksville, Tennessee. Take the last train to Clarksville. 31st, Little Rock, Arkansas. So many more dates. You can check those out at FozzyRock.com. Go look for that and look for all of the VIP and ticket info. And look no further. John 5 comes alive right here on Talk is Jericho. Okay, so here at the world-famous, iconic Whiskey A Go-Go, we've played it many times, and so has John 5 here. And it's funny because we're just jumping right into this. We were talking yesterday, Eddie Trunk had his top 20 Kiss songs of all time, and he was doing it on the radio, or 2 days ago, whatever. So he had me call in. At the very end of it, there was a couple voices, and you never know who's on the radio and who's not. And I hear a guy go, "I'll see you tomorrow. I'll see you next on the other day." And I was like, "John, is this you?"
Yeah.
And so were you actually on in studio?
Yeah, I was on the phone, and you know, I usually sit in for the whole show, and it was that whole episode. You know, that whole show. It was like 2 hours.
Does he usually do that? Or is it his daily show, or which one? What did we do?
Well, no, we did his daily show, but I just stayed on for the whole Kiss countdown.
Okay, so he does a Kiss countdown show quite often then?
No, that was his first one.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah,
gotcha.
So the first one he did was Aerosmith Top 20.
Okay.
And now he did Kiss, and I had to be involved, just like you and Corey Taylor and everybody else. It was great, though. A lot of fun.
Now, do you know your Kiss top 20?
I know I have it, but I know my number one. My number one was strange, was Going Blind. I love Going Blind.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, like such a well-written song. It's like anybody that covers that song, people would be like, oh my God, what a beautiful song. Because it's got such a great melody and chord changes and everything.
You know what's funny is I just watched that Unplugged, Kiss Unplugged, and I emailed Gene. This was in 96, the height of grunge.
Yeah.
And you pull out this song from 74 or 75, that's a grunge song.
Yeah.
So Kiss created grunge as well.
Yeah.
It's a very grungy song. You could hear like the Lemonheads or, you know, whoever was hot at the time doing that song.
Yeah,
Going Blind. What else did you have on it?
God, I had Almost Human.
That's a cool song.
That's a great
funky
song.
Man.
I had, 100,000 Years. Oh, I had Torpedo Girl off.
That's an obscure one.
Yeah, Unmasked. I'd love. And your list was different from everybody's list.
Well, I knew that it would be because, first of all, Eddie and Scott Ian and Portnoy and all those guys always bust me because I am a fan of those bands from the era that I came in. So for me, I love 80s Rush. I love 80s Kiss. You know, and a lot of times people bag on me for it, and I don't give a shit because that was where I jumped on the bandwagon.
When did you jump on the bandwagon?
So I was a huge Beatles fanatic, and not even like my preteens, I just fell into it, and I knew everything. I had all the books, all the albums, but the two guys that I used to play Dungeons and Dragons with were big Kiss fans.
Okay.
So finally, I gave Kiss a chance. All we are saying was when Heaven's on Fire came out.
Yeah,
and okay. I saw so Paul Stanley. And so I saw Paul Stanley jump through the hoop of fire. And I was like, "That's the coolest guy I've ever seen in my life."
That's awesome.
So that's when I got into it. Yeah. So
your first time seeing Kiss, which was when?
Animal Eyes tour, early 1985.
Yeah.
How about you?
I came in. I was a fan. My first album was Love Gun when Love Gun came out, but I was too young to see him. So my first time seeing him was Lick It Up.
So you must, I think we're pretty much the same age. Yeah. So you were probably like just a little kid when you got into Love Gun.
Yeah. I was really, really young, but I was so into it.
So your first time was Lick It Up then?
That was my first time was seeing the Lick It Up tour. And I think it was Vandenberg. Now I could be wrong, but Vandenberg and Queensryche. It was, I don't know if Queensryche was on Animalized or if it was.
That seems a little early for Queensryche. Look it up as 83.
Really early album.
Oh wow.
Really?
Where did you grow up?
In Detroit.
Okay, so that's the mecca for Kiss too.
Yeah. Oh my God. Kiss was so big in Detroit. It was a strange thing. It was like Detroit was all about Kiss back then in the 70s. It was crazy everywhere.
Because even like there's a famous gig from Animalize, the Uncensored gig, the MTV gig.
Yeah.
I watched that gig probably, I'd say, 6 to 8 times a year. It's my favorite show of
all
time.
Now, is that the Detroit one?
Detroit one.
Okay. What year was that?
84.
Okay, 84.
Yeah.
Now, let's see. I don't know. It was that, you might not know that. Was this on MTV?
Yes.
Okay.
It was Bruce Kulick's first gig with the band on MTV.
Okay, so check this out. I was at that show.
You were?
Yeah. So this is hilarious.
So how old are you now?
I'm 47.
So you were the same age. So you were 13 years old, maybe 14. So I think that might have been early 85 when they did that show.
So I made this sign that said Kiss Rocks Detroit.
Uh-huh.
And it made it up on stage. So you can see my sign on stage.
Does he hold it up?
I don't know if he holds it up. I don't remember. But I know it's laying there on the stage. And I was like, there's my sign.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Hilarious? I know there's signs thrown up because, like I said, I've watched that gig so many times.
Yeah.
I know there's signs on stage. Right. There's even, they hold one up at some point.
Yeah, it's at the end. But isn't that funny?
That's so funny because they play everything so fast.
I know.
I asked,
and maybe they were in a rush or something. They had to get somewhere.
I asked Paul about it and he said, well, Gene thought, of course, he throws Gene under the bus. He said, Gene thought everything was faster then, so we needed more punchy and quicker songs.
Yeah.
And if you listen to Lick It Up, the tempo is like, it's so fast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Paul goes, all I remember is it was way too fast and I was spinning around like a whirling dervish.
Oh, my God.
Because that's all he did.
That's amazing.
That's, so is Kiss one of the reasons why, I mean, obviously you play with Rob Zombie and you have for years, and part of Rob's shtick is the character and the makeup. Does that come from your love from Kiss?
Obviously, yeah. Like, I just loved when people were... I just loved to be entertained, even when a kid.
Yes.
I just loved when there was a big, big production and seeing that as a kid. Like, the, you know, it was Kiss, and my sisters were into Elton John and all that stuff. But everything larger than life, you know, good song,
sure,
too. Everything, and that was what it was about for me, you know. But yeah, when I was in Manson and I was doing the makeup, and now, you know, with Zombie and we have the, you know, the huge show, I'm like, this is what it was like.
It's a modern day Kiss,
yeah,
almost.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Really, really cool. And, you know, we just opened up for him in the Chicago
Open Air.
Open Air.
Oh, yeah.
And that was rad, you know. We went on right before him and it was just so cool. I got a really cool, you know, like you, like, we know the guys so well, but it's different when you're like walking from the stage with Paul and you guys both are in your get-ups, you know?
Wow, good,
yeah,
point.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's strange, you know?
You both got your battle armor on.
Yeah, yeah. I think I have a picture of that I'll show you. It's really weird. Like, someone just snapped a picture of us walking, you know?
There's something to be said, too. Like, we did the Kiss Cruise a couple years ago.
How is that? Did you get motion sickness?
I didn't. No, it was fine. I mean, there's some Dramamine and stuff you can take. There's actually a little wrist,
yeah,
band you can wear. There's a ball in it that eliminates it for you. But our drummer, Frank, is a huge Kiss fan, but from 70s only. He was like you found them early. And, you know, you meet Paul and Gene when they got their normal street clothes on. It's cool. But, dude, when they walk in that room,
yeah,
with the gear and the shoes, the boots...
Right.
Frank was just staring at, like, as he looks, literally looked like a 7-year-old kid.
Yeah.
You know, and you see them come in, nothing can beat that feeling of, like, it's Kiss, like the monstrous Kiss.
That's what was weird for me. It was the reunion, or, you know, when they first got back together, and I was in Connecticut. No, I was in New York doing a show and they were in Connecticut, and I was like, well, we had a day off, and so I drove to Connecticut with my friend, and, you know, they all knew I was coming, and I was like, all right, all you gotta do is just, I remember Doc going, hurry, you know, you're late, you know, just go through that curtain. And it was like a little black curtain, and I didn't know where I was going, and I went through the curtain, and it was just those guys, just the four of them all made up, getting ready to go on stage. And I was like, oh my God. And I have a picture of that too. It's so weird. And they're all like messing with me and stuff. And then they were on stage and did Shout It Out Loud. And that was the first time I ever saw them with makeup. So it was like such a strange time.
Surreal. You
know? It's like seeing like Superman or Spider-Man. And he's like right there. And then he jumps on a building or something. You're like, oh my God, this is so weird.
Have you had that experience with anybody else that you were a fan of when you were a kid, where you get like this moment of peer, you know?
Not only one time. I was doing this. This is a real metal thing to talk about, but I was playing with Katie Lang, and we were doing this show for VH1.
You played with Katie Lang? No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. All You Can Eat Tour. Yeah. And
All You Can Eat Tour.
And we were, you know, doing the show, and Prince was on the show, and he was walking through the hall. And I remember it was like, whoa, that's pretty amazing.
The little guy, right?
Yeah. But so powerful.
Yeah.
You know, like, just like, that was the only other time I was like, oh my God, like, just blown back.
I did Good Morning America once, and as I got on the elevator, Tom Cruise got on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with the entourage and stuff.
Sure.
And I didn't say anything, but just the aura.
Yeah.
Like, you look like, holy f***, that's Tom Cruise. Like,
right.
He's real.
Yeah.
He's a real guy.
Yeah, that's
right.
You
know, and like you said, like, when you see those type of people, it doesn't matter how much fame you have, it's still like, whew, I mean, that's beyond.
Yeah.
You know?
So
tell me about, I didn't know you played with Katie Lang.
Yeah, there was a lap steel player named Greg. Oh my God, I can't remember his name. But his name's Greg, and he plays with everybody, you know, lap steel player. And they were auditioning guitar players, and there was like a zillion guitar players. And I was like, well, what am I going to do to get this gig? And I said, I know, I'll learn every single song like on her new record and her previous on her big record, and I'll learn everything. It was a lot of open tunings and country picking and stuff like that. And I went in there and I knew everything, and I got the gig, and you know, I was nobody, and we were playing three nights at, you know, Radio City and Private Planes and all this stuff.
My goodness, I didn't realize she was that huge.
Yeah, Madonna is hanging out. Yeah, this was in 96, maybe?
So was that kind of one of your first big gigs?
Yeah, 96, 97, wow. Yeah.
It's interesting when you have that, because, you know, the those type of people have, like, just amazing musicians that you never realize. Best. You know, you get, like, the...
Greg Lease.
Yeah, Greg Lee, there you go. Bingo. Shout out to Greg.
Yeah.
I remember I went to Saturday Night Live one time, and the band was, not the band, the Rihanna. Rihanna was, and in disguise almost in the back playing guitar was Nuno Bettencourt.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, I was like, right. Oh my gosh, that's Nuno. And she's like, oh, yeah. You know, like, you type of, like, those type of people, like having the Killers with them on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
It's very important. And I've never seen, you know, musicianship like this, because I love musicianship. It's just, there was this guy named Larry Campbell that came on, and it's so inspiring still today. He played fiddle, pedal steel, guitar, banjo, mandolin, and he played it unbelievable. So he was always practicing. He was in the bathroom, or he was in the bathroom of the bus, or he was, and he was always playing. But he was such a phenomenal musician, and the, you know, because I play all the time, but the dedication to do that with like five or six different instruments, you know.
You realize that, you know, you're a hotshot, but there's guys out there that are assassins, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, wow, you know, it's you know, he was like, hey, how do you do that? Because I am coming from a metal background too, and he's never seen like something like that. And so we really hit it off, because I was getting so many things that, you know, the metal guys don't see. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was a wonderful experience. And then after the Katie Lang thing, I joined like Marilyn Manson or something. I was like, well, wait a minute, where's the masseuse? You guys don't have a plane? And yeah, where's Madonna?
On,
it's like, you know.
You know, I saw, and just to finish up, I saw Springsteen. It was one of those, like, I'd never seen Springsteen.
Should I take my shoes off too?
Please do. It's comfortable. We run a comfortable ship here on Talk to Jericho with some very cool shoes and cool socks as well. You know, I went through this phase, or actually not a phase, I'm going through this, or I made a deal with myself. I wanted to see as many, you know, Hall of Fame classic musicians and bands as I could.
Yeah.
Even like, I'm not a huge Springsteen fan, but he came to town. I need to see Springsteen.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, of course.
And
did you go?
I went, oh yeah. Oh, and it was, you know, 3 hours. I knew three songs, but it was one of the best shows I've ever seen.
Right, right.
But in the middle of it, randomly, unbeknownst to me, Tom Morello was on guitar for that tour.
Yeah, that's right.
And they did a song, I think it was The Ghost of Tom Joad. I'm there with a bunch of, you know, Springsteen dudes, like, you know, 50-year-old businessman. And when Tom started doing his shit, his soloing,
that's right,
these guys were like, oh my God, that guy shreds, man.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
they'd
yeah.
never seen anything like it before.
That's right.
It was a great mix.
Oh, it was so cool. He was telling me he had to learn like a zillion songs for that, because Bruce will just call out.
He calls them out. People had cards, like big signs with song titles on them. So he would go through the crowd and grab, here's, I'll grab this one, I'll grab that one, I'll grab this one, I'll grab that. So he had like five or six different signs with the song title on it. He turns around, shows Max Weinberg, the drummer, the sign. They count it off. Everybody follows Max. And if you don't know the song, you better learn it quick. And it was like that, dude, because there was songs I had never even heard. Like, let's do a Poor Boy Kitchen Blues. It's like, what? Yeah. Oh, yeah, Poor Boy Kitchen Blues is from his second record. Like, and they all fall in and they all have to know it.
Yeah, that would give me such anxiety, not just to, like, know all these songs, but whenever I go on stage, I have to have everything right. Like, if I go and do a jam with somebody, I have to learn the solo exactly how it is. You know, it's just who I am, and I just would never want to be. So that would give me anxiety.
You have to have a lot of improv elements, and some guys don't like that or don't want that.
Right,
you know?
Right. But the chord changes and all that stuff, and I just like playing things just like the record.
Yeah.
And because I always give it, you know, they work so hard to record the song that way. Every note, you've made plenty of records. Every note you think about and you go, okay, that's great. You know, so I've always played songs just like the record, you know, and just to give the music respect.
And plus, too, you're coming in and playing, like you talk about Manson and then and Zombie as well. A lot of those songs are songs that were made without you on guitar.
That's right.
And they're famous songs that people want to hear.
And I play them exactly how they are.
That's respectful. That's the way it should be. Yeah.
And we just did, which is coming out. You know, I loved White Zombie. And there was an album called Astro Creep 2000, which was a phenomenal record. We just did the whole record at Chicago Open Air when we played again with the Misfits or something.
In its entirety?
Yes.
And oh, wow. Cool.
So I learned every little squeak and noise and everything, and I just played it exactly how it was written because I love that record and I wanted to give it as much respect as possible, you know.
Yeah, well, of course, and I think fans appreciate that.
Yeah,
you know. So I know you've played with so many other people in your career, John, and I want to talk about some of the ones who may surprise people. But before we do that, got to talk a little DDP, why it surprised a lot of people as well, because I wouldn't be able to do this podcast or play with Fozzy or wrestle in New Japan Pro Wrestling if not for Diamond Dallas Page and his DDPY program. Wouldn't be able to do a lot of things if not for DDP. DDPY keeps me loose and limber and at the top of my performance game. It can help you live a healthy life as well, no matter your age or skill level. And DDP is so sure that it'll work for you, he's giving you a chance to try it for free for 7 days. All you got to do is download the DDP Yoga Now app. You can get it on iOS and Android. And like I said, I got the DDPY app on my phone. And in addition to all the DDP Yoga workouts, the app tracks your weight, inches lost, even takes pictures so that you can see your flexibility, physiology, and core strength changing for the better from month to month. You can try all of that with your free 7-day trial. The DDPY app has a Bluetooth heart monitor, tracks the calories you burn, and there's over 100 workouts, including live workouts every week from the DDP Yoga Performance Center in Smyrna, Georgia. Again, all part of the free 7-day trial. The app has nutrition tips and recipes to help eat healthier as well. And Dallas will even give you a little personal motivation on the days you need it most. He'll pop right up in your app and tell you to get going, bro. So download the DDP Yoga app now. Start your free 7-day trial now. Then after you get hooked on DDP Yoga, get 20% off an annual membership at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Change your life. Own your life, get your free 7-day trial and 20% off an annual membership at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Get in the best shape of your life, mentally and physically. Go do it now with DDP Yoga.
The history of rock and roll is littered with the unexplainable.
The last thing he said to anybody was to Suge Knight, and it was, "I'm dying, man."
The Rock and Roll Twilight Zone with Richard Serra. Listen and subscribe at Apple Podcasts and Google Play.
So who else have you played with in your career besides Manson Zombie? You mentioned Katie Lang. Was there any other weird ones like Katie Lang? I know there's a Roth album, which I want to talk about.
Ricky Martin, I did a record with
him.
No
kidding.
Yeah. Wilson Phillips.
Wow.
Let's see. I did some work with the Scorpions, Meatloaf.
You're talking about writing or actually playing?
Both, yeah.
Really? What Scorpions album did you play?
Skynyrd, Hour One.
Okay.
And... you know,
Skynyrd too?
Yeah, two Skynyrd records, Rod Stewart. You know, there's tons of them.
So let me ask, because you're kind of one of the like the quote unquote hot shots. We need a guy. So how does it work when you come into play with, let's say, Skynyrd?
It was a strange situation. So I flew into Nashville, and I remember this because I love Skynyrd. And I only take gigs which I love the artist and I know everything about them. Like, if they call out, you know, song 3 on, you know, Nothing Fancy, I'll know it. So I remember flying into Nashville and it was freezing. I had this big black coat, fur coat on, huge. And I had no eyebrows and I was a wreck. I was like, I look like just a complete lunatic. So I walk into the writing room and, you know, it's you know, throwing out ideas in a writing room, especially with those guys, it's like, you know, it's tough. And then now here comes me walking in there and they literally thought it was a joke. Yeah, they were like, "Well, what's going on here?" You know, they were like, they didn't understand what was happening.
Nobody told them that you were coming in?
Well, they knew, but they didn't know. They just thought like a normal guy was going to come in and just write, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
'Cause they didn't want to say, "Oh, I'm from Marilyn Manson," because it would throw them off.
Right.
So my publisher was like, "Oh no, he's a great writer and he did this and that and that." And they were like, "Okay, great." But if they were like Marilyn Manson, they would be like, just sight unseen.
Sure, of course.
They were like, "No." So I walked in there and I said, "Oh, I'm John," and blah, blah, blah. And then I could tell like they were kind of like whispering and like not like, so I thought to myself, I got to do something. So I just started playing some Chet Atkins. and some Jerry Reed and all this stuff. And then they went nuts. They went absolutely nuts. And I ended up writing like six of the 12 songs on the record, and then a bunch of songs on the next record.
That's an interesting thing. Like you said, you came in there and here you are with a big name, but these guys are looking at this freaky guy. Yeah. So what do I got to do? I'll play some Chet Atkins.
Yeah. And that's how you just do it. You know, it's like, it's just the language of the music.
You know? Sure.
It's just really, and we're still such great friends. We still, you know, talk all the time.
It's D. Snyder, his biggest song was a Christmas song that he wrote that Celine Dion recorded.
Oh, wow.
And when they were pitching it, D said the same thing you said. Don't say a word that D. Snyder from Twisted Sister wrote this song.
Yeah.
Just say it's a song.
Right.
And if she finds out later, she finds out later. Because if they come out, the guy from Twisted Sister wrote you this, you're like, whatever.
Yeah.
No chance,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's funny because you never know. Like, Dave Roth was like, oh, maybe we should send some of these songs to this person or that person. And I thought, you know, it would be wonderful because, you know, the songs me and Dave write are really great tunes. You know, they're not just Van Halen type of songs or Eat 'Em and Smile, but you know, he'll write some unbelievable lyrics, and his lyrics with Van Halen are so cool, but they're so off the wall. But he can write like an amazing like song. You're just like, whoa, dude, that's like really smart and
poetry.
Great.
Yeah, literal poetry.
Really, really great.
Yeah.
So, but it worked, you know, for that situation.
His lyrics on the last Van Halen record, Different Kind of Truth, they're so good. Like, there's double entendres and just the way he's writing all these different things. But let's talk about that. You did the DLR record in 98, I believe it was.
Yeah.
And so I was working with a wrestling company called WCW. And this is when there was not really internet and still record stores. And I remember we were in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and I was killing some time before the show at the record store. And I walked in, and lo and behold, I see this CD of DLR, Dave Lee. I'm like, what? I had no idea. Like, Metal Edge never said anything about this.
Yeah.
You know, and then listened to it, and it said, you know, John 5 on guitar. Were you listening to John 5?
John Lowry.
That's right. That's right. And that's what you were, I think, when you were in Marilyn Manson, maybe.
Manson gave me the name John 5.
And why did he give you the name John 5?
Because it's a biblical meaning in the Bible, and then I was the fifth member.
Oh, okay. Biblical 5 is the meaning?
There's a story in the Bible is John 5.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Gotcha. But then just to see it, and then the initial track is called Slam Dunk, and if you guys are Roth fans and haven't heard it, go look it up.
Yeah.
It's a killer riff.
Yeah,
it's only about like 2.5 minutes long, but it's a killer tune.
Yeah, it's
man.
A killer tune. And we did all that live. It's all live.
Recorded live.
Completely live. Me and Ray Luzier.
It's now in Korn. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just me and Ray and Dave. And because I played bass, but it's credited Bourbon Bob. Yeah, so
there's the mystery, guys. You wonder who Bourbon Bob is.
Yeah, it's me. But so we just great story. I was playing with Halford at the same time, but Dave didn't want me after my Halford rehearsals because we were going to go to Europe with Halford, and we would rehearse. I remember
so the band two.
Yeah,
yeah.
I remember we would rehearse at noon. So Dave was like, well, I don't want you tired after rehearsing with Rob, so why don't you... We're going to start at 6 a.m. And I was like, 6 a.m. to play
what?
To play this music live with my hero, you know, Dave? It's like... So I remember driving. I can see myself driving on the freeway, and the sun was coming up. It was still dark. And, you know, because you got to get there early and set up and all that stuff. And I didn't have techs or anything. I just did it all myself. I remember driving, the sun going up, and I was like, here we go. This is something I'm going to remember. And we did the whole record, like, in a couple days.
How did you hook up with Roth in the first place?
That's such a weird, like, inspirational, like, Disney movie type of story. I was sitting on my dumb friend's couch, and I remember looking at his books. And it's Crazy from the Heat. You know, I was looking at his books, and I remember going, I wonder what Dave's doing. I wonder what Dave Lee Roth's doing. And I just like was doing nothing. And I called the number on the back of Crazy from the Heat book. There was like a little phone number, or like a management or whatever.
You're kidding me.
No, yeah. So, and I like, you know, just, hello, whatever, productions and stuff like that. And I said, oh, my name is blah, blah, blah. And I was wondering if you are listening to music at this time. You know, I would like to submit some songs to Dave. And they were like, well, you can send them. And I was like, I mean, that's good enough for me. And I knew Van Halen stuff as good as Van Halen did. So I went and did my best Van Halen stuff, and I did Slam Dunk, and I did Little Texas, and I did Relentless, and all this stuff.
Oh, that's a good tune too, yeah.
And you know, of course, all with no vocals. It was just the music, and they were. I got a call back, and I couldn't believe it. And it was like, I think this was before cell phones, and so sure enough, I got a phone call, and they were like, "Oh, can you send three more songs?" And I didn't have any money. I had like zero money. And so I just pulled every favor and I recorded three more songs. Now, recording music back then was different. It's not like you could do it at home now today.
More expensive.
Like, you had to go into a studio and do it all up. And sure enough, you know, I got three more songs and they were like, okay, we like these. Can you do more? And I was like, I can't. And you know who I was talking to was Ed Anderson. Remember Ed Anderson? It was this Van Halen security guard back in the day. So I was like, I'm sorry, Mr. Anderson. I just don't have the money. He goes, all right, well, just come up to Dave's house. He wants to meet you. And I was like, oh, my God, really? And they gave me the address. And I remember right when I got off the phone, I drove to the house so I knew how to get there so I wouldn't be late.
Oh, you went there. There's a trial run.
So I was like, here's the house. And this is where they did the Pretty Woman video. And this is where they did all these photo shoots. And this is where they rehearsed when they were a kid. And this is where Dave smoked pot, you know, with his, you know, friends. And so I got there and I remember ringing the bell, ding dong. And he goes, hello. And it was that Dave's voice, you know, in the intercom. And I was like, hello, my name is John Lowry. I'm here to see Dave. And he goes, come on in. And I remember he comes walking out. I'm standing up for everybody in Radioland. He's got overalls on. His hair's all long. And he goes, John, good to meet you. Love these songs. Great stuff. Great stuff. We're going to go into the studio and we're going to record it just like Van Halen did. We're going to do it live and it's going to be great. Are you in? And I was like, sure. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. And it just all happened that fast, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever tour on that record?
No, I joined Marilyn Manson.
Oh.
We were going to. And I got the call to like join Manson. But I remember Dave going, say, John, why don't you come on over and we're going to practice some stage moves. And I was like, what do you mean stage moves? He's like, you know what I mean? Like when you bend over, like, you know, and I'll do a flip over you, you know, like I did with Mike Anthony, you know, I would just do a somersault over him, stuff like that. So be here at 3, you know, it was great.
That's so, actually a pretty good Roth without, right. You're not trying. It's just the good cadence for it.
Yeah.
Was it hard for you to let go of that? I mean, obviously if you had no money.
It was. Yeah. But he, you know, I've always been, you know, super close with Dave still. Mm. And, you know, I talked to him and we did another record.
That's, I heard about
that. Yeah, and it's so good. I think maybe I can even play some after we get off the air here. I think I might have it on my phone.
Does it have a name? It's got a cool name.
There's some songs, but Somewhere Over the Rainbow Bar and Grill.
That's right. Somewhere Over the Rainbow Bar and Grill.
And all these songs are like that. And dude, he's, oh my God, dude, his voice was so great. I'm telling you, Chris, it was unbelievable, this guy's voice. And he did all these like overdubs. And we just had such a great time in the studio. I don't know how much time we have, but I'll try to like, you know, I'll just try to go through this. But we're in the studio and I'm playing and he goes, say, John, you chewing gum? And I was like, oh, yeah, I am chewing gum. And he goes, get rid of it. You know, stuff like that.
He could hear you chewing.
And then he'll, like, tell me, like, more elbow. And I'm like, what does more elbow mean? And I was like, okay. So I was just moving my elbow more. I didn't know what he meant. What's more elbow mean? So there was this, we finished up, and I did all these overdubs. When you hear it, you'll understand. There's so many guitar parts. There's so many things going on. And I was going on tour with Rob, and he goes, great job, John. Really phenomenal. This is great stuff. when you're gone, we're gonna get
Greg Bissonette.
Greg Bissonette.
Yeah,
we'll get Bissonette in here, and we're gonna get all these guys, and we're gonna do drums, and everything's gonna be great. And I remember the engineer going, "Well, Dave, that's gonna be kind of difficult because we didn't do it to a click. You didn't want it to a click. You know, there's no click, so it's gonna be very difficult." And Dave's face was like, "What do you mean?" You know, because Van Halen never did it with a click. They were just always playing and stuff. And he goes, I'll never forget this, dude. And I was leaving like in the next day, a few hours. I had to go home and pack. And he goes, John, listen, we're friends. You got to do me a favor. You got to redo the record. I'm like, but it's like 3 p.m. And, you know, I leave tomorrow at like noon. And he's like, I'm asking you for a favor. And this is our hero.
Right.
You know, asking for this favor. And I call my wife and I go, it's like the Beth lyric. You know,
I can't come home.
So yeah. The boys me and the boys are playing. So I did it. I
did one day,
whole record in one day with overdubs and everything. What I'll play you, you know, you'll hear it. It was all done in one day over like 24,
how many,
16 hours.
How
maybe.
Many tracks? How many songs?
12, 11.
How did you do that?
It was, I knew the stuff really well. And if you look at my Instagram, I always play to click. It's like what I do. I just always play to a metronome. And I just did it. I did it. And it was one of my proudest moments. That's what I'm in, like a Disney movie. It's like, you know, you did it. You high five.
Yeah.
It was like walking out of the studio when the sun's coming up. And it was awesome. And I also played bass right after too.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what's going to happen to that record?
I don't know.
Because it's been a couple of years.
Yeah, it's been a few years. Yeah. And I don't know. It's up to him because, you know, he put a lot of money into it. So I don't know what's going to happen. I should call him.
Maybe
we should call him right now.
Let's do it. I've been trying to get him on my show for years.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he's doing anything with Van Halen anymore. You know,
I don't know.
Could be the time to put it out.
I don't know if he is or if he's not, you know.
The Lost Roth album.
Oh, it's so good. I'll play it. There's there's this one song called Nothing Could Have Stopped Us Now. And it's so good. I think it's about Van Halen, kind of like Damn Good, you know? So
was that about Van Halen, Damn Good?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So really great stuff.
That's cool, man. Yeah. Quickly, I just want to interject. You mentioned that Instagram, and you said earlier, have you ever seen my other Instagram? And you mentioned what it was called.
Knights in Satan's Service.
And I just started following that. I had no idea that it was your Instagram.
So in like January 1st, because I planned this for a long time, because I have all this Kiss merchandise, and I was talking to Gene, and I said, Gene, wouldn't it be great, like, because he loves the Beatles, and I said, Gene, wouldn't it be great, all that Beatles merchandise, wouldn't that be awesome if you could look at it, and it tells a little story, and where it came from, when it came out, and why it came out, and blah, blah, blah. And he was like, yes, it would. So that kind of, like, inspired me just to go, I'm going to put out, starting January 1st, brand new year, and I'm going to put something up every day, but I'm going to keep it in order. Start with t-shirts and do all t-shirts and then jackets. So I'm almost
every day. So you have enough stuff?
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
You like an avid collector for your whole life?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like just but all like really great merchandise. Like, cause they were massive in Australia in like 1980. I mean,
right. The Unmasked. Yeah.
Huge, massive, massive. They had like 100,000 people outside their hotel. And I mean, they were so big. So there was a lot of merchandise at that time too, you know?
So you kind of, when you're touring around, try and find different pieces and different things.
It's a great hobby. I'm telling you, it's such a wonderful hobby because I play guitar so much.
Right.
But it's such a wonderful hobby when you're traveling, when you're driving, when you're on a plane, when you're like waiting to go on or something like that. It's so wonderful.
So you're online looking for stuff.
Yeah, it's great, and you meet great people, and it's just so much.
What's the coolest piece of memorabilia that you have?
Well, because people I can say, oh, like Peter painted a picture of me and him and stuff, but I'm like merchandise you could get, but it was so rare. I guess I have this Kiss ruler that came from the Acoin offices for promotion of Love Gun. And, you know, it went out to very few places, like as just a promotional gift. But things like that, wow. You know, that are just so like,
you would never even know that existed.
People would pay like $2,000 for that thing. You know, it's just so much fun.
There's a guy on I listen to a lot of Kiss podcasts. Uh-huh. Have you heard Three Sides of the Coin?
Of course.
That Mark Cicchini.
Yeah. He's got a great one. Yeah.
He's a collector. He's from Detroit as well.
That's right.
You've probably seen his collection.
Now there's a guy, I don't know even know if I should mention him, but his name is Joe Marshall, and he's in Detroit because Kiss was so big in Detroit.
In Detroit, yeah.
This guy has got everything. Now, when I mean he's got everything, he's got everything. He's got all the Alive outfits. He's got all the Phantom robes. And he's got, like, the Dynasty outfits. He's got everything. I mean, he's got everything.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Like, how do you get that stuff?
I don't know. He's that guy. But he's been collecting since, like, 1983 or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's pretty incredible. It's pretty incredible.
So I tried to buy Paul's guitar that he played on that Animalized gig we were talking about. It's like the leopard one.
BC Rich
got repainted for the Asylum tour.
Yeah,
and then he sold it, or it was an auction or something. But I was like, even if it was repainted, he still had. I wanted the one with the leopard print on it,
In that poster.
Yeah, exactly. So talking about playing with Rob and all the stuff you've done, you guys have written so many records together.
Yeah,
how is it? You mentioned you sent in all the music to Roth. When you're doing something with Rob, are you guys sitting down jamming stuff out, or is it the same concept?
It's the same thing. Like, me and Rob will sit down, we'll create music, and he'll go and put lyrics to it. But we have a new record that we just finished, and I don't know when
you've been talking big about this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what we did is he came up with lyric and melody first, with like a drum beat and like a little simple music. And then I came in and did the stuff to it, and it's so good, dude. It's so good. It's such a great way to write, because it was like such an open slate for him, you know, just to go, oh man, I love writing to drum beats, because he loves drums, and he comes up with all these great hooks, and it's so good. I'm like, God damn, it only took us 13 years to figure it out, you know?
You ever wonder sometimes what the hell he's talking about in some of those lyrics and titles?
Oh, I have no idea.
Do you know what the name of your last record was?
No.
It's like
I always say like Venomous Rat.
Yeah.
You know, or
but there's a whole big
satanic
tag
orgy. It's more difficult to learn the album title than it is to music, you know?
Yeah.
So it's really crazy, but we'll be on stage and we'll be rocking out, and he'll get like mixed up or something, and he goes, you know, and I'll mouth like, you know, the lyric or something sometimes if it's something really easy, and then he'll be like looking at me, and I'll, because the lyrics are so crazy, and I'll be like, I have no idea what you're saying.
I'd always heard that.
It's great.
Like Van Halen, like Eddie never knew any of the lyrics that Roth was singing. He didn't care. It's Roth knows what he's talking about. It's probably the same situation.
Same thing. Like, we did a live record, and he's actually laughing because, like, I'm trying to mouth him the words or something, and you can hear him laughing on the album. He just kept it on.
But you know, you guys, it's funny because when we tour and you do the festival circuit, and there's a small pool of bands that are the headliners, and it's always Zombie is always one of the ones when you guys are out touring. Does it still amaze you that you're at that level after all these years?
Yeah, it really does. And man, I'm so thankful, because even if like we don't feel well, or if it's freezing, or if it's cold out, and if we've done, you know, multiples in a row, I'm always like, I am so thankful to be doing this, and that people are here and are loving it. So I never, ever, not once have ever taken it for granted.
Mm-hmm.
I broke my foot on stage, and I was, you know, I don't know if anything's Well, of course, because what you do, if when something really horrible happens to you, you let out this horrible, gut-wrenching scream. Yeah, and that's what happened to me on stage. And I didn't stop the show. I just got up with a broken foot and just kept playing.
How did you break it?
I got off. We have these like risers, these ego risers, and the lights went down and I just stepped wrong and that was it.
That's it. Yeah. Foot, yeah. Yeah. Know? It's amazing too, because you have so much stuff going on stage.
Oh my God.
How much production rehearsal do you have to do to make sure you don't get stepped on by a giant robot or whatever? Yeah.
There's usually surprisingly only a day, but there's been so many times where I forgot about fire or something. I'm like, oh my God, if I just, because we run around a lot, if I was like in that spot, I'd be like barbecue, right. You know? But, and poor James Hetfield, I always think of that.
Sure.
That's terrible. That yeah. Poor guy.
That's happened to me before, not obviously getting Jamesed, for lack of a better term, but pyro, and I would go and there'd be a little last flash or like something would go off right in front of me that wasn't supposed to. And that's scary. What the problem is. It's not like, don't stand here because there's one to the left.
Yeah.
But then something sparks and it might just be a little one, but that little plume of flame coming up, it's like,
yeah,
we're at the mercy of the gods
that's
for this
right.
stuff, you
that's
know?
That's right. It's frightening.
Have you ever had any issues at all with any of the props on stage?
No. No. I only just like, nothing really bad except for when I broke my foot and I like pooped my pants a couple times on stage. But
how did that happen?
I was just sick, I guess. But you know when you like fart and you're not sure if like it's gonna be
the classic definition of a shart. Yeah.
And it just was terrible. And I was like, oh no, because I remember now. Yeah, I was sick, and it was just. And I remember going over to Rob. And he was like, what's wrong? Because I had like that face on. Yeah. And I said, don't go over in this area because there's poo all over the place.
It actually landed on the stage?
Yeah, because it went down my leg.
Were you wearing like
water?
Were you wearing like a kilt or something? Or, or just ran down your jeans?
Yeah, it went down like, because I wear like this. I used to wear this like, it's like kind of cut off Dickies or something like that. Yeah. And it was just a mess. It was a damn mess. And
there's nothing more humbling than when you poop your pants.
Yeah, that's right. It's like, yeah. So, you know, but knock on wood, nothing really bad has happened, you know.
Let's talk about the stage costumes because you guys have such a great look. Yeah. Is that something that you all plan together, or is it kind of like a Halloween party where you're like, wait to see what I got for this tour?
Yeah, I run it by Rob, of course, what I'm going to do. And sometimes he'll go, oh, no. But most of the times he's like, oh, yeah, that's really cool.
What's something that he didn't want you to wear?
Oh, boy. Let me think. I don't remember. I think there was one time where I was going to play, which I do in my instrumental thing, but I was going to play for my solo. I was going to do guitar, banjo, and mandolin. And he just thought, I think it's a little, I don't know if like the Slayer crowd's going to go for that.
Right. But meanwhile, the Slayer crowd probably would really appreciate that.
Yeah, but we were better safe than sorry.
I got you on that. Because it's interesting because when you think about, the basic, we're talking a lot about Kiss, but this all fits. The basic concept of what Kiss is, and Gene's rule to me that I still do this day, is always look like a star.
Yeah.
You know, you show up in a great costume and jacket, and on stage, you look like something.
Yeah.
But that's important.
It's entertainment.
It really is.
It's entertainment. People pay a lot of money, and they want to be entertained, and that's what's important. You know, everything is important, and I remember I met Nancy Wilson when I was like 10 years old. It was like the very first famous person I met. And it was like 1980. And
she outside of a gig or something? Or
she was doing an autograph session at a guitar store.
Oh, cool.
And she just looked like an angel. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, this woman, she looks so cool. And I always thought, oh man, you got to look really cool, when you go out or you go on stage. And I always thought that. I always thought it was so important.
It is important. Even we had a signing a couple of days ago when we were in, I can't remember, Phoenix. Mm. And, it ran a little bit behind. We were supposed to leave at noon. And I said, well, I can't leave till like quarter after. And one of the guys was like, dude, that's not cool. Everyone's waiting. I said, dude, I got to do what Gene told you. I got to look like a star. My hair's not dry yet. I can't put on a baseball hat.
Yeah.
That's not what people want to see from Chris Jericho.
They're waiting in line because there's a young kid that will remember that his whole life.
Yeah, exactly.
He'll remember that moment for his whole life, and he's been waiting there, you know, and it's important.
It really is.
You do a meet and greet, you got it, like, can't go out there, like, dragging your feet. You got to, like, you know.
Yes.
And because we've all had those experiences.
Yeah. I mean, it's another, Dio told me, he said, I saw him, we played at the Wheel Turn, and he was there with Motorhead, signing autographs for all these people at the back of the room, back where the garage was. And I said, you do that every night? He goes, listen, he goes, always give people their moment. He said, you won't remember it, but they'll never forget it.
They'll never forget
it. What a great little bit of advice, you know?
Now, did you ever meet anyone early on that wasn't as nice as you wanted them to be?
There's been a couple over the years. Like, but I understand that now that I'm, you know, quote unquote, have some fame.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it was the wrong situation. I remember I met Kirk Hammett in 94 at this place called MacGruber's or Magruder's.
Okay.
It was the big rock club in Atlanta. All the guys will know it. And
how old were you?
I was 23. Mm. And once again, one of the first brushes with greatness that I ever had. And he was there, and he had dreadlocks for some reason.
Yeah.
And I had a broken arm, and I had a cast, and I asked him to sign my cast. They just kind of basically bothered him when he was drinking or whatever, and he goes, and I'm not sure why he said this, and I could be wrong, but I said, can you sign my cast? He said, only if I can use your boner as a speed bump. And I'm not sure what that meant, but he did end up signing it. But it was just kind of like, it's kind of a dicky thing to say, but it was kind of funny too,
right?
But then you realize, now maybe I, you know, some fans come up to you, like if we were talking in a restaurant and someone just came out, hey, I hate to bother you, John, but I would never do that to somebody, just interrupt a conversation. I would wait until there's a law. Excuse me, sir. Like, you know what I mean?
That's just
common manners, you know?
Yeah, right.
How about for you?
I had a great one. I had a couple, because I used to love, when I was a kid, I would love to, like, drive to downtown Detroit and wait for my heroes.
Yeah.
And I went, I guess, I don't know how old I was. It was probably for that Lick It Up tour. So what was that, 84, 83, 84?
83 was looking up, yeah.
So I was there, and I was like waiting for Gene and waiting for the guys, actually. And I remember I had my Kiss, the Originals, the little booklet. And I brought that, and I was like, okay. You know, I was waiting there all day, and here comes Gene. Walks in there and walks to the elevator. And I'm this little kid, and I was like, I've been waiting here all day. I don't care. I'm getting in the elevator. So I get in the elevator, and he was standing like this. Folks listening, I'm crossing my arms. So he was like, crossed his arms. Yeah. He was like just looking ahead, and I'm like this little kid, you know? Handsome little kid, though.
Of course, yeah. Handsome devil.
So I was like, Mr. Simmons, would you mind signing this? And he wouldn't answer me. And he was just sitting there with his arms crossed.
Oh.
wouldn't answer me. And we just was, because, you know, I probably got in the elevator and made him mad, you know, and he was, I remember, with somebody, wouldn't answer me, and I just sat there, and I remember it was the longest elevator ride ever. Now, this is the best part, and I can't believe I said this. You know when you say something, you're in bed, and you're like, oh, God.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I still do that today of this situation. So the elevator opens, and he goes, do you want me to sign that for you, young man? And I go, no, it's okay. Because I was like kind of bummed out, you know?
He was probably just waiting until the door opened so that he could make the quick exit. He didn't have to make small talk.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
He wouldn't even look at me and just was like.
So then what made him change his mind right at the end?
I don't know.
Did you ever tell him that story?
I don't know if I did. I'll, you know, email him on the way home. But then there was the Helford one. And I told Helford this one. I was out in the rain. I was like, here they come. And Rob walked by me. It was like Defenders of the Faith tour or something. And I was like, Rob, will you sign this? And I was the only person out there in the rain. Nobody else. He walked right by me. So I always give him a hard time about that.
With that one, we used to, the bands used to stay at the West End in Winnipeg, and we had knew someone that worked there. So we found out what room, what floor Iron Maiden was on, Summer and Time Tour. And I knocked on every door. And finally, Adrian Smith opened with a towel around his head and a towel. He just literally gotten out of the shower. Yeah. Like, can I take a picture with you? He's like, I remember the voice. I just got out of the shower, mate. And then as he closed the door, I said, should I wait?
Yeah.
But I told him that years later when I met him. And he's like, oh, sorry, man. I'm like, dumb little kid. Like, obviously, can I take a picture, buddy?
Our tour manager, his name's Sully.
Yeah, I know him. Yeah.
Did you know Sully's hilarious? Yeah. Dude, hilarious. Nine Inch Nails, Marilyn Manson, Motley Crue. He gets all the tough gigs because he can wrangle people.
Gotcha.
We were doing this show with Iron Maiden. And he is an Iron Maiden nut.
Zombie and Maiden or Manson and Maiden?
Zombie.
Okay.
He's a nut. Iron Maiden nut. He just loves everything. So we're walking to the hotel in Australia. And he was like... he was like, oh my God, there's Adrian Smith. And he's freaking out. And I, you know, we have a little small talk. And Sully's just freaking out. And this is the first time he's met him. He goes, oh, you know, I'm such a big fan. I love your stuff so much. And he was like stuttering. He goes, Dave, do you mind if I have a picture? And he goes, I'm Adrian. And he goes, I know. I'm just so nervous. And he like, for the rest of the tour, dude, he like died.
That's one of those he's in bed going, call him Dave.
Oh, yeah, dude, he died. He died. It was so great.
You mentioned something that was interesting when you said that he gets all the tough tours, wrangles the guys. Was Manson hard, not hard to deal with, but was he a character to play for? Was it
it was the time where it was just New Year's Eve every night. Every single night was just like, Oh my God. What is this really happening? Yeah. Is this okay? You know, but, I remember we had this guy on tour with us. His name was Lady Butt because he had like a woman's butt.
Lady Butt?
Yeah. But because he had this lady butt, and we just got these, and we all got cell phones at the same time. We all of our cell phone numbers are one number different because we all got them at the same time. We're like, hey, can you hear me? And I remember we got a video camera. Lady Butt was going to document the tour.
It's a great name.
So, you know, I'm new in the band, and the party was always in my room because I was the new guy, and they didn't want people
leave
in
you
room.
With the damages and
leave the room and come back whenever they felt. I remember there were all these girls in the room, and this girl like goes, "Oh, I have to pee," and there was someone in the bathroom, and Lady Butt says, "Oh, use the trash can. I want to videotape it, you know, for like craziness." Mm-hmm. She goes, "Okay," and she pulls her pants down. She's got a dong, like a penis.
What?
Yeah, and she's the whole place. This is on video. The whole place screams, you know, like it's like excitement and clapping and stuff. And it's on, if you go on YouTube, it's called Marilyn Manson Death Parade, and it's this little documentary. And you'll see that scene.
In your room.
In my room. And then I remember this girl smoked a cigarette with her vagina and like just, you know, it like, and it was all the, that was just the first night. And it was so crazy. It was so insane. It was such a, every night was the most insane stuff you could ever imagine.
Is this like a situation where Mick Taylor, he said he quit the Stones because if he didn't, he would have died? Because he said there was so much heroin and cocaine. He said, if I don't leave, I'm going to die because I'm doing way too much shit.
Well, luckily, I've never had a drink. I've never had a drug or anything.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, never had anything. So I was seeing all this going, oh, this isn't right.
Yeah, weird, right?
I remember the bus, I would have to get on the bus and then you go through the curtain. And I had to walk on like the little chair because there was anybody that came on the bus had to be naked. It was just how you got on the bus.
Really?
There was so many people. It was like this. People were like this. So I had
to
walk on against the wall like this just to get to my bunk. It was all the time.
Wow.
All the time.
Did you leave Manson to go to Zombie?
Well, there's like a debate, but I was fired.
Okay, gotcha.
I was fired.
Probably because you were sober.
Yeah, probably.
You're
fun. Yeah, probably. It was probably true. But he just said, oh, I wanted to, you know, write with some other people, but you know, which is fine. It's no big deal. And but then after that, I just I put out my first instrumental record and I joined Zombies. So it's been 13 years.
As we wind down, you mentioned your solo record. And we were just, Dan, I was gonna tell you this. We were, where was the first night of the tour? You can't remember. Might as well have been a year ago. It was just a week. Houston. Mm. And our poster was right next to yours.
At the Scalper. That's great.
Yeah, so you're obviously getting ready to go on a tour.
Yeah.
Just on your own.
Yeah, I've been putting out records for a long time, but it's the first time I toured because I didn't think anybody would really care.
Oh, really? This is your first solo tour?
Well, it's a third year, but I've been putting them out since like 2004, the records. But it's been, and I can't believe it, because it's kind of like an Alice Cooper instrumental show. It's a big production.
Your show?
Yeah.
So you got a lot of props and production.
Yeah, a lot of weird stuff. But we'll do like all these crazy instrumental songs, but then we'll do like bluegrass and western swing and all these different kinds of music. So it's really interesting, and people love it. They come out in droves, you know. It's like, I can't believe it, you know, that people love it so much. So
well, you're a legit, you know, guitar hero.
Yeah,
kind of a big deal.
It's
some
fun,
people.
You know. People
who
really
do you play
it.
With? What kind of a band do you have?
I just have a 3-piece, but the only thing, I hope they're not listening. They're so good, and because the music's very, very difficult because you have to know all these styles of music. But that's the only drag, because if one guy like decides to leave, it's going to be impossible to find another.
Oh, you mean
person.
If somebody goes and doesn't want to be in the band anymore?
Right. Yeah. It's so hard to replace somebody, you know.
Sure.
Because it's like, oh, learn this song, and they're like, I can't play that. You're really nuts.
It's hard to be in a 3-piece as it is.
Yeah.
Because everybody's got to be great.
You think of all the great 3-pieces of all time. So all of a sudden, your people just diminish to like a 2%, 3%, you know?
That's interesting.
It's
funny because Alex Skolnick told me the same thing, because he has his like a jazz trio.
Yeah, Alex Skolnick Trio.
Trio, yeah. And one of the guys,
I bet you there's 3 people. I'm no detective, but I think that's the 3
piece. That would tell me there's 3 of them. Yeah. But at one point, somebody left, I think a drummer or something, and he was like, yeah, it's kind of hard to break in somebody new for, you know, we got 2 weeks till the tour. Here you go, guys, you know?
Oh, my God. Yeah. I found our bass player at MI. You know, I was like, just give me the 10 best musicians you have in here.
At the Music Institute?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Here in L.A.
Yeah. So this one guy came out, and he's like really tall and skinny and super young, and he was so great. I was like, this is going to be great. The first guy's amazing. And the other 9 guys, nothing. And I was like, well, will you do it? And he's like, I guess. So I had no other choice, you know, but I didn't want him to know that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he's going to hold you up for cash.
Right.
There's a great Roth story that Billy Sheehan told me, that when Roth was putting together the Eat 'Em and Smile band, he left it up to Billy to put together the band. And obviously Vi was involved, so they auditioned drummers. And he said, like, there were so many drummers coming through. Like, it was like, you know, every drummer in LA. And so they got down to, like, if they're all great. If anybody complains about anything, they're gone.
Yeah.
So, man, the traffic was bad today. Bye. What did I say? Oh, the weather sucks today. Bye. What did I do?
Yeah.
So they went through the whole chain, and they came up with the drummer they wanted was the chick that was in Vixen, Roxy Petrucci.
Okay.
And they said, like, this is great. Like, Roxy Petrucci, a woman. And Ross was like, no. No girls in the David Lee Roth band. What else you got? We got this Greg Bissonette guy. Perfect. You know? No women allowed in the Roth band.
So great. And what a great band. I was at the Lucky Strike.
I just talked to Michael Starr about this, because he was there to sing.
Now, I know we're wrapping it up. I have a great story. So Lucky Strike has been asking me to come and do like my instrumental thing. Come and do like, you know, 3 songs. And I can't, or busy, or I'm not in town. They've been asking me forever.
Because they had the jam night every Monday or whatever it was, where all the dudes in town would come and just play. And
so I said, I'll come. And I remember, I think it was on Wednesday or something. I was like, I'll come.
Wednesday, yeah.
I'll be there. Everybody's like, great, this is going to be awesome. And I'm like there, and I was like, man, there's a lot of people here. And I remember seeing a friend here, and they're like, I think David Lee Roth's here. And I'm like, Dave's not here. Trust me. He's not here. You can't even have him get to, you know, to the store.
Yeah.
And he's like Mr. Magoo. He's like the worst driver. So Dave's not here. And like, I'm like, wait a minute, Billy Sheehan's here? And I'm like, they're like, yeah, I think they're going to like do this Eat 'em and Smile reunion. I'm like, no, they're not. Dave's at home. I can like call him right now. He's at home. So I get up there and play, and everybody's in the crowd. Marilla, every like celebrity you can imagine. And I play my set, and the place goes nuts. It's like on YouTube, and the place goes absolutely nuts. And I was like, this worked out great. And I said, babe, let's go to the bathroom. And I took my wife, and there's Dave. And I was like, oh my God, this is happening.
Wow.
And he goes, John, oh my God. Because the backstage was like in this other building.
Yeah, because the normal backstage is very small.
Yeah.
Behind the stage.
Yeah. So he was like, John. I was like, Dave. It was like, we were like, oh my God. And he was like looking at his lyrics and all this stuff. And all, and I said, Dave, whatever you do, just don't sing it in Portuguese. You know, 'cause he put out that record.
A Sonrisa Salvaje.
Yeah. So yeah, then the fire marshal broke it down. And I remember Steve I was back there with his guitar. And I'm dying. I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be the greatest thing I've ever seen.
It's the gig everybody wants to see.
This is the thing. And Steve's like, and the fire marshal's calling it, everybody. And the three guys, like Greg and Billy and, you know, Steve, they're all back there and they're ready to go on. And Steve, like, started making noise. The place was going crazy and they shut it down.
So it
was a great gig for me.
Yeah, you're the headliner that night.
Yeah.
That freaking fire marshal needs to get a little bit of a butt smacking.
Dude, that was...
That's rock and roll. He disrupted rock and roll history. Wow.
I know.
Because Ralph was there, because I think he was going to sing a couple songs and then Roth was going to come out, or Roth was going to do all of them. But they brought Ralph in to let Roth know that we're doing this either way.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, why Dave was there. Like you said, I'm not going to let him sing the songs. I'll do it.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Which he's great, too. You know, he's amazing.
Yeah,
he's incredible.
I said to him, they should do, if the Van Halens are done with Roth, they don't want Sammy, they should do what Queen did. Queen plus Adam Lambert. They should do Van Halen plus Michael Starr. It would be great. They could do both eras. They could do Sammy and Dave.
They'll do something, I bet.
They have to.
Yeah.
I heard they rehearse every day, the three of them.
Yeah.
Van Halen's.
I don't really know, but I sure hope so.
Yeah, me too. And I hope they do an Eat 'em and Smile reunion.
Yeah, me
like,
too.
Like, I thought that would be the starter. And here's the announcement of the tour, but...
Yeah, and Dave's very productive, man. He is not the guy that you call him and go, what are you doing today? Nothing.
Right.
He's not. He's doing a zillion things. He's busy. I remember he was in Japan for a while, and he was like, hey, listen, you want to come to Japan and write some songs? And I was like, no. I'm not flying to Japan.
He's gone total immersed in Japanese culture. He's got all the tattoos now and all that sort of stuff.
Rad.
I know, dude.
Did you see him with the Foo Fighters when he came out with the Foo Fighters?
He shaved his head.
Shaved his head and he was all tattooed. I was like, he looks so badass.
I know. Like I said, he
can I swear on this?
Of course. Oh. I think we have been the whole time, I'm not sure.
I know. Are we on the air yet?
Oh, no, we started? Wait, I forgot to press record. Shit. He like that's why I've been trying to have him on my show, because he's now like learned so much about the history of wrestling from Japan, because it started in Japan basically. So he knows all about Ricky Doza and all these Japanese things. I want to ask him about Sonrisa Salvaje, because that's how I learned how to speak Spanish when I lived in Mexico. Is I bought it there and just learned it, so I knew Tomito. That means shy boy. But just the concept of why he did that in the first place was very strange. Last couple of questions for you. First of all, who's your favorite guitar player that's not the typical Page, Steve Vai, Eddie Van Halen?
I would say, well, there's Jerry Reed. Now, you'll know Jerry Reed because he played in Smokey and the Bandit. He was, and he's been in every, he was in Waterboy. You're too stupid, remember? he was the coach in Waterboy, but he's a phenomenal guitar player.
Interesting.
Unbelievable. Roy Clark, Chet Atkins.
All those Chicken Pickers,
I love all those guys. Yeah, it's like.
Don't you have a song called Chicken Picking or something like that?
I should.
Yeah, you should.
I should. I have a song called Hell Haw, and it's all that.
Hell Haw, that's great.
You know, because of Hee Haw, you know.
I get it.
But it's. we did a video for it, and it's like this play on Hee Haw, and we did all these like weird campy jokes, like why'd the guitar teacher go to jail? Because he fingered a minor.
muso humor.
So, you know, like, because it's a muso thing. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
So just stuff like that. It's a great video.
Yeah, it's cool.
Great fun stuff.
And what's your favorite guitar solo that you've ever played?
Let's see. That's a really great question. I would say I do this song. It might be Hell Haw. It's great. Or Behind the Nut Love. And I do the whole song Behind the Nut of the guitar.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. Really I've never neat. Heard of that before.
Yeah, yeah. It's cool. Check it out. And there's one called Noche Acosador that's like this flamenco type one I do. It's really cool.
And then there's the killer riff from Slam Dunk, man.
Yeah.
That is a great riff.
Yeah.
If you guys haven't heard it, go check it out. But, dude, what a great
time. Yeah, it was fun.
Glad we would make this work.
Yeah.
Thank you, dude.
Thank you. Have a great show.
I will. And you, too. You're doing the whiskey coming up, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Well, invite me, and I'll come to eat him a smile with you. All right, thanks to John Five. He is on the road with Rob Zombie this summer. The Twins of Evil tour, Zombie and Manson, hits Virginia Beach tonight. You can buy tickets at robzombie.com. And then John Five and his band, The Creatures, are doing their own tour this fall. The Famous Monsters tour starts October 31st. That's so apropos. All the ticket and VIP package info is available at john-5.com. That's john-5.com. And all cabins are available at chrisjerichocruise.com for Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, loaded with great rock and roll shows. Fozzie will be playing. Corey Taylor will be there from Slipknot and Stone Sour. He'll be playing. Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons, straight from Motorhead, right onto the boat. King, The Stir, Dave Spivak Project, Spiwi, you heard him in his tunes right here on Talk is Jericho. The Darlings of Rock and Roll, the Cherry Bombs will be there. Shoot to Thrill, the world's best female AC/DC cover band. And Blizzard of Ozzy, the world's best Ozzy Osbourne cover band. Remember, if you book your cabin now at chrisjerichocruise.com, you get to see all these concerts for free. All the live shows, live podcasts, comedy shows, meet and greets, wrestling matches, all included in the price of the cabin. All this for free. Don't forget the Alpha Club versus the Bullet Club, the Bucks of Jericho, or is it Y2 Jackson versus Kenny Omega, Marty Scurll, and Cody. It's the big rematch, Alpha versus Omega, part two, on board the Jericho Cruise. Then, of course, Impact versus Ring of Honor, Sammy Callahan versus Marty Scurll, with more interpromotional matches to be announced. Live Talk is Jericho with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Live Talk is Jericho, remembering Eddie Guerrero with Conan and Rey Mysterio Jr. Live Talk is Jericho with the entire Bullet Club, Cody, Kenny, the Bucks, Marty Scurll, Adam Page. Live Talk is Jericho with Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler, the greatest commentary team in Raw history. Mick Foley's doing his 20 Years of Hell stand-up show. We got Killing the Town versus Keeping It 100, podcast versus podcast. And, of course, the first round of the Ring of Honor, Sea of Honor tournament has been announced. Bracket A, Lethal versus Whitmer, Daniels versus Delirious, Skrull versus Titus, Young versus Gordon. Bracket B, Mark Briscoe versus Ferrara, Paige versus Kazarian, G Betelgeuse versus Beer City Bruiser, Jay Briscoe versus King, Beyond the Darkness will be there, scaring the pants off you, Colt Cabana, Marty DeRosa, Unprofessional Wrestling Podcast, that's hilarious, actually the Unprofessional Wrestling Show, live comedy from Brad Williams, Craig Gass, Ron Funches, the Impractical Jokers, so many others are going to be there. Come and make history with us at chrisjerichocruise.com. There's still cabins available, but they're going quickly, and that's not some kind of an exaggeration. Oh, that's the real deal. Every morning I wake up and see how many cabins we've sold, and it makes me very, very happy. So we'll see you there at chrisjerichocruise.com. And speaking of happy, coming up on Wednesday, The Rock continues as we go deep into the pages of Rolling Stone magazine with senior editor Patrick Doyle, who's sharing amazing stories about the Rolling Stones, Bob Dylan, Ed Sheeran, Kid Rock, Paul McCartney, the Kings of Leon, and so many huge musical icons that have graced the cover of the most famous rock and roll magazine in history. And the cover of the Rolling Stone, it's going to be there on Wednesday. In the meantime and in between time, you guys have a great weekend. Until then, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. And go check out Nights in Satan's Service right now on Instagram to see all of John Five's killer Kiss collection. And we'll see you next week.
The Westwood One Podcast Network.